When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You'll say, I can tell you this because we didn't resign you, but you were this close to getting to the big leagues. When they were starting to pack your bags or talking about packing your bags, they went and bought Randy Choate and they didn't need you anymore.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, I'm talking to Derek Loop, a 23rd round pick of Cleveland in 2006, who is still pitching professionally. Derek bounced around pro baseball for 10 years before finding a true home in the Mexican League, where he spent the last 8 seasons. We talk that incredible journey, its true perseverance, getting drafted out of Division II school but released during his first spring training, playing with the Indy Chico Outlaws, multiple pro organizations, and even the Japanese Independent Baseball League. He talks life in Mexico, adjusting to life on and off the field, and misconceptions people might have about playing there. Derek has grinded as hard as anyone on this show. It's a really fun episode talking to a guy who just didn't quit and has made an incredible career for himself. Episodes of Phenom on the Farm now drop every other Wednesday, and if you enjoyed this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go check out past interviews, and if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We have just wrapped college baseball season, but it is clearly going to be a crazy coaching carousel, and then we have the 2024 draft coming up, so tune in to BA for all of that. It is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America, and with that, let's talk to Derek Loop. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was the 23rd round pick of the Guardians in the 06 draft out of Cal State Los Angeles, longtime veteran and active left-hander Derek Loop. Derek, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I'm very much looking forward to this because I try to get a variety of career experiences on here, and you have one of the most interesting ones. And just in terms of where baseball has taken you and where it's taken your life personally, I want to ask from the get-go, when you graduated high school, did you still believe you'd be playing baseball in the year 2024?
I can't say that I honestly felt that way. I would have thought, man, if I could be playing at 40 years old, that'd be pretty awesome. But how many guys in their life and their career in baseball ever make it to 40? So I can't say
0.00001%.
Exactly, right? So the fact that I've gotten here so far is, I don't want to say it's satisfying, but it's pretty awesome. And I know how hard I've worked to get here. So to know that I'm still playing, I'm still doing what I love, it's pretty awesome.
As a high schooler, how did you wind up at Cal State LA? Like what, sure. I always kind of think, because I went to a smaller school, when you're not a no doubt college baseball prospect, like playing college baseball becomes a choice. Do I want to do this or do I want to go to big school and do whatever?
Certainly. Well, in high school, I wasn't much of a pitcher. I didn't pitch very often. And what was really cool for me is that my head coach, who has since passed on, John Herbold, saw me taking infield at first base. And he told the coach that was with him, said, hey, that kid's going to pitch for my college. And at that point, I was just a big goofy lefty playing first base, batting right-handed. I was a lefty pitching or batting right-handed. So it's kind of like the antithesis of what everybody wanted. Nobody wanted a right-handed hitting left-handed thrower. And when he approached me after the game, because he was there to watch a kid from the other team, he dropped the, "Hey, I want you to come pitch for my college." I'm like, "That's interesting, because I haven't pitched very much." That year, I had pitched a little bit, which is, ended up working out great because my arm was healthy. I never had to worry about arm problems early on. But as time went on, I had a couple other teams looking at me, and what ended up working out in my favor is that I actually went to Cal State LA on a full academic scholarship to play baseball. So I was a presidential scholar while playing baseball. I went there to play baseball, but I got there on a full ride academically. So that was a good selling point for me. I got to go to school for free, got to keep doing what I loved. Obviously, I had aspirations to play Major League Baseball, but at the time, I was literally a 6'3", 245-pound lefty. I had never spent a day in the gym throwing 81, 83, topping out 85. So no prospect in me whatsoever, but this head coach happened to see something special in me that I didn't see in myself. I had hoped that I'd find it, but saw something in me and gave me the opportunity. And that's how I ended up at Division II in Cal State LA.
How long do you feel like it took you to become a pitcher? Because if you're not a pitcher or someone who pitches a lot, it's an adjustment, especially when you're used to playing every day and playing first base and things like that. Like, how long was it you toe a rubber and I'm comfortable here, this is what I do?
Now, I got the crap beat out of me my first year in college, which honestly was the best thing that could have happened to me. And that's what his thing was. Like, hey, look, you might not have success, but you're still going to get thrown out there, and that's how you're going to learn. So fortunately for me, he kept giving me opportunities. I think I had like a seven plus ERA in my first year in college, but I kept getting the opportunities, one of my, the non-pitching, we didn't have a pitching coach at the time at Cal State LA. We had a hitting coach and the head coach, that we didn't really have anybody step in as a pitching coach. But what was crazy to me is the hitting coach said, "Hey, you have a sinker that moves really well. What if you had something just moving the other way? What if you try to throw a cutter?" So literally from the first day that he showed me or had me think about throwing a cutter, that it changed my career for the better at that point. Because up until 2015, I threw a fastball, cutter, and a curveball until I became a full-time reliever. But that pitch really set me on my trajectory to become more confident on the mound, so I wasn't a one- or two-pitch pitcher. I had something a little extra. But it took me till my sophomore year of college to really feel comfortable on the mound. And that's when I started having success, and then that snowballed into, you know, where I am now.
When did you see that playing at the next level, like playing professionally, or that you were going to have a status outside your school, potentially a future in baseball beyond just those 4 years?
I'm going to say during that sophomore year, another reason I went to this college is this guy, Herbold, was famous, but he was very good at getting guys signed. They didn't win any championships. They were decent in the league, but one of the big things, his selling point was, "Hey, look, if you come here, I have connections, and if you are good enough, you will get signed to play professional baseball." And that was obviously my goal from day one. But I think after my sophomore year, I was all CCA first team as a closer. I was closing that year. That I started getting cards from teams would fill out this information, like, "Hey, where are you from, height, weight, any medical history." So when those cards started flowing in, I was like, "Man, I think I really got a chance at the next level at this point."
The thing about medical histories, and you had mentioned it a few minutes ago, that, you know, you didn't have that much wear and tear in your arm. Just judging by looking at your career stat sheet, it doesn't seem like you've gone on the shelf much, if at all.
Knock on wood. I was on the disabled list one time in like 2009 for a week. Other than that, I had a scope done on my elbow after the season in 2015, just a typical cleanup. I was back to 100% within 3 months, like not playing catch, but back to 100% within 3 months. And fortunately, that's been a very, I guess, a big highlight in my career, that I've been reliable and I haven't been injured and I'm able to go regularly.
I mean, everyone is unique, but it's kind of just with all the attention that's on arm injuries and stuff now, it's kind of interesting that you didn't really pitch full time until you were, you know, developed into your, you know, close to your adult body, which kind of just an interesting note, kind of learning that you didn't pitch. But as you get into, say, your junior, your senior year at Cal State LA, what kind of pitcher were you at that point? And, you know, clearly a prospect because you did get drafted, or at least a draft, but compared to even like 5 years after that, like, what, you know, if you were coaching you as your junior and senior, like what could that kid maybe, what was then and what could he have been?
I mean, obviously everyone, hindsight's always 20/20, and it's like, oh, if I had this knowledge, if I was, you know, this age with this type of knowledge, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, I would have gotten to the big leagues with the knowledge that I have now, which anybody can say that at this point, but really consistency in the gym. If you can spend the time, because that's what I learned in my career, that the gym is what really kept me healthy and what kept me going in the whole bit. That if you can stay consistent in the gym and listen to your body, know when you need to take days off, know when you can push yourself, that would be the biggest thing I could take away from what I've learned. I mean, over the, 5 years from that on, because I mean, when you're in affiliated baseball, that's 80% of your regimen is making sure that you're spending time in the gym and getting your work in, because minor league is all about development, trying to get to the big leagues. And that was what they pushed on us big time.
Walk me through your draft experience. Is getting popped in the 23rd round everything you ever dreamed it would be?
Honestly, it was crazy because I didn't get drafted as a junior. Like I had my numbers wise as a junior, as far as win losses, I had some of the worst luck ever. I was 0-8 as a starter for the first 8 decisions of my career or my season. I had 8 runs of support in those 8 losses, but that's how baseball works. Man, our head coach called me in the office, different head coach at this time. He goes, hey, you're the best 0-8 pitcher in the whole country, just so you know that. And that was, it was a nice like breath of fresh air to hear that. And then he goes, hey, you're 0-0 from right on and we'll see how you finish. And I finished 4-0 after that. So that helped. But senior year, I kept hearing, hey, you know, top 10 rounds, which every scout tells you what you want to hear. So I had a little bit of a party because I was hoping I was going to be drafted. That first day came and went, and I had nothing. Nobody called me. Nobody said anything. And then at that time, you can listen to everything, all the draft picks coming on via the internet. So I was just on the page, listening to pick by pick. I was by myself on the computer because everybody got home, family, everybody, friends. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Cleveland Indians / Guardians, I had a team that I talked to one time the entire time I was in college, called my name. Got a phone call immediately. My hair stood up in my arms and my bat. And it just honestly was literally the best day of my baseball career. Thinking back about it now, there's one other time too when I got signed out of indie ball again. But to know that I had that confirmation that I was going to be a professional baseball player was one of the most satisfying experiences. I think about it right now. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, even though that was how many years ago at this point? Almost 20 years ago. So. But everything I expected it to be and more, because it was just that now I'm a professional baseball player. That's what I've been busting my butt for every single day. But that was not, little did I know, that was just the very start of what it was going to be or what it could be. But yeah, it was awesome, man.
Because so that turns into a whirlwind summer too. Of you head to short season, you do that gamut. Just your first 12 months. In professional baseball, because trying to learn a routine, learn pro ball, go off to random town and play that, and then eventually find yourself looking for a job.
Certainly. And it's one of those things where I don't think I flew one time in my whole life before then. So this is my second time ever on a plane going to a little small town in Ohio to play for the Mahoning Valley Scrappers. I had a good first season. It was a complete like culture shock and just being around other people that I'd never been around. Never been around people from the East Coast, from the South, Dominicans, Venezuelans. Never had that information or that experience before. And you get guys coming in that were, you know, top round picks with a lot of money and flashing money and that kind of thing. And here I am, a senior signing for next to nothing. And it was an awesome experience and a very eye-opening experience that life isn't the way I thought it was, especially in baseball. There's a lot of politicking and a lot of favoritism. Well, not necessarily favoritism. There's a lot of money invested in guys, and a lot of guys are getting opportunities that you're not going to get for obvious reasons with the draft picks and stuff like that. But after that first year, I had a good year. I had a sub-3 ERA my first year in professional baseball. I go into the offseason with the workout program, get my workout program in. Didn't pay too much attention to it, but they changed the front office over the course of the offseason. So when I got to spring training, nobody in the front office knew who I was. I wasn't a draft pick of theirs. I spent the entirety of the spring training in the Dominican Summer League group or the Rookie League group, only to be released like a week before the season started. And that was I mean, earth shaking for me. Going my first year, have a great year, and then now I'm not even in professional baseball. So that was my first, I guess, taste of failure in professional baseball.
Is there any thought at that time to maybe I should, I'm going to need to do something else?
No, definitely not. I knew that I still had that fire from that time. I mean, I had a great year, my first year. I'm like, how do I not get an opportunity here? Let me see what I can do. Fortunately for me, a very good friend of mine was a coach in the Golden Baseball League in the Atlantic, or sorry, on the East Coast, or West Coast, California. I played for the Chico Outlaws. So very fortunately, I gave that guy a call. He couldn't believe it. So his reaffirmation that I can't believe that you don't have a job helped me mentally too. Like, hey, this guy still thinks I have it. There's no reason I shouldn't be playing. So I signed there, had a great year there, won a championship in indie ball, but still wasn't signed. That still didn't deter me. I spent my off season trying to throw a little bit harder. At that point, I was, you know, upper 80s for the most part. Got a long toss program, spent some time in the gym, got my fastball up a little higher, you know, low 90s, 91, 92 max probably at that time. And had a great start to the season, and I got signed by the Red Sox mid-season or early in the season that year. And that was, I was talking about, you know, one of the best days ever. So to bust my butt in any ball to get signed back to an affiliated team was an amazing experience to get the opportunity to go play for the Red Sox for a couple of years.
And not to make like assumptions here about your time with Cleveland and then your time with the Red Sox and an affiliated, but I always kind of think with small school guys, because like I played at a small school, and obviously you don't have the big trappings of playing for Vanderbilt or Florida State or anything like that. And you know, and I've had guys on the show who went to those big schools and were first round picks and stuff, and then talk about how hard the minors is and like the lifestyle and things like that. I'm not discounting their experience at all, but for you as someone coming from a little more of like an underdog scenario and not the, you know, you don't have all the finer things in life at the small school. Did you feel like it was more exciting for you than maybe some of your other teammates when you're getting those shots at affiliated ball? Like, did it feel cooler?
I mean, it'd be crazy not to say yes, of course it felt cooler. Knowing that I'm getting it on my merits, not because of what's happened to me in the past, not because somebody thought I was worth a first round pick or $500,000 or $1 million. That what I'm doing right now is based on what I have accomplished and that what I keep doing. Obviously I could not do this without the support of my parents and my family. I mean, I wasn't making any money. If I didn't have that support, there's no way I could have done this. I would have had to get a job and go into the workforce and do that kind of thing. But so without them, none of that is possible at all. But to be able to have the opportunity to put it was based on what I've been doing. And not because, like, oh, this guy's a former first rounder, let's give him a shot or something like that. It was like, no, this kid's fucking killing it. Pardon me. But this kid's killing it. Let's, let's give this guy a shot. Definitely satisfying, but I mean, more motivating to know that, hey, these guys are getting me for who I am, not because of what somebody else thinks about me. Absolutely.
And I want to ask about pitching with the Chico Outlaws, because from that moment, from the time you signed with the Red Sox, every step you have made, all these other variety of places, you would be deemed as a higher step than the Chico Outlaws, because you played, you know, you went back to indie ball, but it was in the Atlantic League, which is the premier indie ball league. You obviously spent a ton of time in Latin America and like Mexico now. But what did you pick up from being in Chico that you would say served as a building block for the 15 years after that?
When you're indie ball, it's not about development. It's not about, hey, this guy gets a chance, this guy gets a chance. It's about winning. And when you're in a situation where it's, you know, sink or swim, you have to learn what kind of guy you are. If you don't, it's one of those things that it's really hard to teach if it's even possible. You either go out there and compete your butt off, or like I've known a lot of guys that are they're fantastic in the bullpen. They can kill the bullpen. They'll spot up. They'll throw 93 in the bullpen, 95 in the bullpen, but they get in the game and they just can't get it done. So you learn quickly there, because if you don't perform, you're gone. You don't have a job. So it's sink or swim. And if you can't learn to swim, you'll learn that baseball's not going to be for you, especially, I mean, when you get to the higher levels in the minors too, it's a little bit more like that. I'm not sure what it's like now in affiliated ball. I've heard it's completely different than when I played. I haven't played in affiliated ball since 2012. I've been outside of that since then, and I've heard it's a lot different now. But when I was there, it's a lot about, a little bit about performance, a little bit about development, but you have to learn to compete when you're in a place like indie ball like that, because there's everybody has been released, everybody doesn't have a job is looking for you to fail so they can take your spot on that team. Especially when you're at a lower level of indie ball, there's a lot more guys available. A lot of guys fresh out of college that didn't get picked up, or guys like me that were released 1 or 2 years into pro ball, they're all looking for jobs. So if you can't perform or you can't handle that pressure and mentally, physically, then you're not going to make it very far. And I learned what I needed to do, what I was able to do, and what I wasn't able to do, and try to capitalize on those situations.
The year with the Red Sox, you get picked up. Do I have this right that you picked off 17 batters? So there's 17 runners?
In 2010, I picked off 17 runners.
I mean, yes, as a guy who didn't pitch, like what went in? I mean, how? Like what's the secret of the move? Has that move maintained? Like, would you say you still have a good pickoff move?
I would say absolutely not. So I think that comes with a little bit of older age and more focusing on the hitter. Cause I would intentionally throw ball one instead of a pickoff move, and you get smarter runners the higher levels you get. And when people start knowing that you had a good pickoff move, they stop trying to take advantage of that. And I was just putting myself in a hole. But really, when I first started doing it, my thought process was I need to throw the ball to first base while throwing to home. That sounds completely contradictory, but I had my whole upper half stay square towards home and my whole lower half hitting that 45 degree as best I possibly could. And I would just sell out my whole upper half to get all the way down to where it would be just a flick, because everyone wants to throw the ball hard to first base, so they have to rotate into it. I was literally just flicking the ball to first base because I would say 2/3 of my pickoffs were guys taking their secondary leads. They weren't even going the back. And there was times where I had umpires calling box because they would say, hey, look, I was looking home. There's no way you picked the first base correctly if I'm looking home for the pitch. So that lasted. I mean, I had that 1 year where I had 17. After that, when I was playing at the higher levels, AA, AAA, those kind of things, there's more umpires for one. I didn't really have too many box call on me, but it was less important for me to work on my pickoff and get those guys out than to focus. Because if I ball one to a guy in AA, AAA, especially lefty on righty, I'm falling a hole, and a double in the gap isn't going to help me at all if I can't pick the guy off the next pitch. So what's crazy about that is I think I've rolled that pickoff move into my inside move to second base. I think I have an excellent move to inside to second base now. I've had probably my last 5 or 6 pickoffs have been at second base. But yeah, since then, I had an article written about me about the pickoff move. There was never actually any video of it. I didn't really have any video. This is 2009, 2010. So there was recording video and that kind of stuff wasn't as big as it is now, where you can put the game on YouTube and that kind of stuff. So unfortunately, I don't have any actual video of that. There's some still photos, but nothing that really showed what I had back in that year.
You mentioned that you got to AA, you got to AAA, you started getting to the higher levels of baseball, and you're kind of in an interesting thing where you're jumping from organization to organization, you're hitting free agency, you're finding a spot. Did you see a path to the big leagues? Like, you by that point, you've seen enough baseball where you kind of know where you stack up, like, and you're getting into your late 20s at that point. Like, what did you want out of your career when you're jumping to organization?
I knew that at some point it would have to be a stroke of luck, because I wasn't a prospect. I'm a free agent in my later 20s, and in baseball that's getting old, especially if you don't have any time in the big leagues. I thought that I had a great opportunity with their Dodgers when I signed with the Dodgers. I knew with the Phillies, I was just kind of riding out that time in AA because I was kind of the garbage man, the cleanup guy, that I wasn't really going to get much of an opportunity there. So I tried right out the year there, signed with the Dodgers. Dodgers, I don't think, had any intention of keeping me because I was just a free agent guy filling. But fortunately for me, I could not have pitched any better in spring training in the AAA group. But I also learned a lesson too. I had signed with the Padres in spring training 1 year. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to keep to myself and let my pitching do my talking. Well, I threw 3 or 4 innings all spring training, and they were all on the road. None of the coaches knew who I was. Nobody knew anything about me. And I'd get released because nobody knew who I was. Nobody really talked to me. Nobody really said anything to me, and vice versa. So when I was with the Dodgers that year in 12, I made sure that I talked to everybody. Hey, Derek Loop, nice to meet you. Hey, I worked on my pickoff move. At that point, I already had a good pickoff move, but there was a lefty coach teaching a pickoff move, and he saw me pick a guy off in the game. I know that he saw me. So I went and talked to him. I said, hey, thank you for those pointers that helped me pick the guy off first base. So I'm fresh in his mind. So every time they had conversations about me in spring training, I saw him pick off a guy today, or he struck out three guys in the triple A game today. So I definitely learned that going through the minors too, that you kind of have to play the game, because if nobody knows who you are, or if you're not a very likable guy, they're looking for any reason to get rid of you. They're not looking for any reason to keep you. They always want reasons to get rid of you. So, as far as that path, I thought that was my best opportunity. I had a conversation with the trainer after the season was over, because he got promoted to the big leagues from AAA and the Dodgers when I was playing in Albuquerque. And I went and asked him for a workout program the offseason, trying to get back to affiliated. Like, hey, can you give me a workout program? Sure, come to LA. I didn't live too far away at that time. He goes, hey, I can tell you this because we didn't re-sign you, but you were this close to getting to the big leagues. When they were starting to pack your bags, or talking about packing your bags, they went and bought Randy Choate, and they didn't need you anymore. And Randy Choate at that time was like a 15, 16, 17 year big leaguer throwing 78, 80 miles per hour. But they had a proven veteran as opposed to a guy they didn't know what they were going to get, because I was just barely in spring training with them. So that was almost a bittersweet thing to hear that I was that close. And that was my last year in affiliate baseball, which honestly was real. That was probably the most frustrating part of my career. I was 28 years old, throwing the ball great in AAA, touching 94 from the left side, especially back in 2012 when velocity wasn't as big a deal as it is now. To not get a chance again with anybody was really frustrating. But
do you think you would have kept going as long as you have? I would say, because it seems like you've made a nice life for yourself, which we'll get to in general, but do you think you would have kept going to the multiple indie ball stops, like the, you know, two Atlantic League teams, trying the Mexican League? Do you think you would have kept that up if you didn't have in the back of your head, I was that close, like I could be a big leaguer?
That's a great question. I don't think I've ever thought about that, or anyone's ever asked me that before. Or even if I had gotten there, like if I had gotten there for a brief call up, if I would have kept playing, like, oh, I accomplished, I made it, and now I can move on with my life. That was probably, like you said, that's probably more motivating, knowing that I was that close and I didn't get there. Like, let's keep going, let's keep grinding. However, I'll tell you that it did mess with me really badly that next season, because I ended up going to indie ball without having a spring training invite anywhere. I was 29 years old. I just had a great year at AAA. I had a 4.8 in Albuquerque. 4.8 doesn't sound great, but when you're playing in Albuquerque in the Pacific Coast League, that's pretty dang good. I was 11-4 starting half the year, and half the year as a long reliever. So going into going to the indie ball season when I played for the Lancaster Barnstormers, in my mind, I'm like, I don't belong here. I should be back in affiliated ball, if nothing else. I was this close to the big leagues, and I kind of have a mental breakdown in the sense that I started walking everybody. I couldn't throw strikes. I had a mental block with the strike zone and being on the mound. I didn't have the confidence that I had before. And that, I don't want to say it was a wash that year, but that year was really difficult for me to finish because I didn't think I belonged there. And baseball humble you. There's my favorite quote in baseball ever is, there's two types of baseball players, those that are humble and those that are about to be. And I've learned that 100 times over and over again. And the moment that you think you got it figured out is when it kicks you back down and shows you that you don't have anything.
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards. And say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And that year was pretty much your last starting games at all. There, you picked up a couple like winter league starts and some random ones in like 2014.
Sure. And here's something I don't think that you knew, because it's hard to find. I played indie ball in Japan in 2014.
That is, which is why not on your baseball reference page.
Correct. That's why I have such a little bit of outings in 14, because I went to Japan and played in the baseball challenger, like the BCL. For the Ishikawa Million Stars. I was there for 4 months. I was there in order to get seen by Japanese teams to hopefully get signed. I had Japanese scouts at every game. And it was a situation where, like, hey, look, we really like you, but we want you to stick around to the end of the season and maybe to go to some tryouts. And I'll tell you this, I absolutely loved my cultural experience there. It was the worst baseball experience of my career. I threw 109 innings. I gave up 76 hits or so. Of those 76 hits, this is not an exaggeration, 35 of 40 of them were ground balls in the infield that my infielders could not field the ball in time to throw the ball to first base to get the outs. I had 120 strikeouts or so. I could have had 220, but in Japan, if you have two strikes, as long as you touch the ball, I had more PFPs back to me in that season than my entire career combined. I was pretty miserable because it was not good baseball. The baseball experience there was not good. And I wasn't getting signed to a Japanese team. So after 3.5-4 months, I said, hey, guys, I came here to get signed. The cutoff date, I think it was July 31st or so, came and went to sign foreign players. So I said, hey, I'm going to go back. And I finished the year with Lancaster that year. That's why my 2014 is so short. I have an extra 110 innings in there.
I honestly did not know that they had any ball in Japan. I had no clue.
There's two leagues. They have two indie ball leagues in Japan.
You truly have been everywhere, pretty much. Wow. So you moved to the bullpen full time in indie ball. Seems to agree with you. If you look at your baseball reference page, it seems like you have not had too many struggles in the last decade since moving to the bullpen.
I can agree with that.
It's gone well. So when did you did a winter in Venezuela, and then you don't pitch again in Latin America for another 3 years. When did going to Mexico first itself?
So in 2015 was probably one of the best years I ever had in the stateside. I had pitched 49 innings. I'd given up 24 hits, struck out 60 guys. Lefties went 3-for-59 against me. And I was still at this point had hopes of getting signed and getting out of there. I touched 94 still from the left side as a reliever. I turned my cutter into a slider, which was probably the best decision I ever made in my career. Because when you're looking for a lefty reliever, nobody's looking for a cutter curveball reliever. And I knew that. So turning that cutter, so I had a four seam fastball, a sinker, and a slider, which is way more conducive to getting signed. I had a great year that year, and nobody signed me. Nobody talked to me. I had one team say, hey, I put a good report in for you. And at that point, I think I was 30 years old. And I, when not having getting signed that year, I actually had a scope after that season was over. It wasn't anything emergency, but at the end of that year, I got my scope done. But nobody signed me. Nobody talked to me. Nobody said anything. So in 16, I'm like, hey, look, let me see what I can do this year if I don't get signed. Maybe this is it. I'm not sure what's going to happen because I'm not making any money here. Indie ball is paying next to nothing. Fortunately for me, the pitching coach that year in Sugar Land, when I was in Sugar Land, was a Puerto Rican guy named Rafael Montalvo. And he had a connection with the manager, and at that time was Tomateros de Culiacan. And he goes, hey, I have this connection in Mexico. Would you be interested in playing winter ball in Mexico? I said, well, yeah, I played Dominican, I played Venezuela. This would be, sure, I mean, this seems like it would be a cool opportunity. I finished the year, have a great year that year. I set the record for holds or saves that year until somebody else a few years later broke it. But they called, talked to me and said, yeah, Tomateros, I'm going to be a tomato farmer. Like, you know, what is this? And then I checked out video of the stadium, and it is the most incredible, to this day, the most incredible place I've ever played in professional baseball. But I finished the year that year. They talked to me about going down there. I think they had like five of my teammates went down there with me. I think there were six of us that came from Sugar Land that year. I went out and had the best year I've ever had with a 0.5.
I was going to ask if you just felt like the best player in the world. I saw that stat line. I could not believe it.
You know what? It was a surreal experience. I knew when I was going out, I knew I was going to get the outs. It wasn't a question of like, hey, I feel confident. I'm having a good day today. I'm like, I'm getting you out. Every time I felt that way. I actually have a loss that year because one of the two runs that I gave up, it was a tie game, and I threw I think it was a 2-0 or 2-1 fastball down the middle, and a guy wall scraped the ball over the fence for the homer. And that was like my second outing of the time. My time there, I'm like, oh shit! Like, hopefully I don't keep this going. Because, but then after that, I nobody touched me. It was honestly, it was a surreal experience, and that's honestly what catapulted me into the amount of time that I've had in Mexico since then. So, I mean, definitely some luck as far as when I got the opportunity to get down there and having that good first year. If I had the third year that I was down there, I got a 4, and it was just one of those bad luck situations where I came out of game and all my runs came in, and that's just baseball. That's how it works. But fortunately I had that really good first year, and that kind of kept me around longer, even though I ended up pitching great for the remainder 3 years there with Tomateros. And and honestly, I mean, just learning how to pitch, and actually I've had to evolve many times, because once guys knew that I had a good slider, I had to start throwing more sinkers. I learned a split. I threw a split in the bullpen for 2 or 3 years before I started throwing the game. And now it's one of my best pitches. It's one of my best strikeout pitches. But that was how I got into Mexico. Was I just, it's who you know, and that's how business works in general. This guy happened to know the manager. Otherwise, I would have had no other contacts in Mexico. No one. I knew that I could possibly get to Venezuela. I didn't really want to go back to Venezuela, because especially at that time, there was a lot of unrest going on, and they don't really like Americans very much down there at this time. But yeah, it's worked out exactly the way it's supposed to.
A former teammate of yours told me you're the perfect American to have on a team, because like to guide new guys. What is the guiding advice? Like, what do you guys need to know to sustain success down in that league?
You have to be open to a new culture. A lot of guys come down here and they have, I don't want to say ethnocentrism, where they think that they're better than everybody else. But when you don't have that experience and you don't realize that the culture is different, and a lot of things that we deem rude or along those lines down here and in Latin America is just how they're very loud, they're very obnoxious, they're very family oriented, they like to party, but not like get drunk and blackout type party. It's all about, you know, having a good time and being with family and that kind of thing. And that's not something you're used to. That can be a hard adjustment. And people down here are very passionate while they play. They're passionate about their players. The players like to celebrate if they had a home run or a big strikeout and that kind of thing. So if you can't get used to those kinds of things, it's going to be tough for you. And I'm fluent in Spanish now at this point. So when guys come down there, they can kind of lean on me for different things. Like if we go out to eat, or, hey, what does this guy say? Or, hey, I need you to translate this for me. I feel like I'm a good guy to have around for that, because the majority of guys that come down here don't speak Spanish, or at least fluently. So to be able to communicate, it's a little different this year because there's 20 imports. In the past, there's only been 6. So you get a guy down here, he might be the only the American guy on the team, with a lot of other Latin guys that only speak Spanish, and the Mexican guys, most of the Mexican guys don't speak Spanish or speak English. I've tried to take on that role. I knew that when I came down here my first year in the summer, which is after my first year of winter ball, that, hey, like, this is probably going to be, if I want to make a career, it's going to be down here. So I need to learn Spanish for everything, to communicate with fans, communicate with my coaches, to, you know, be a good teammate, talk to the fans, to order food, to travel, to do anything. I knew that, you know, learning Spanish is going to be nothing but beneficial for me. And I ended up finding my wife down here. I mean, there's a lot of directions we can go from here.
Well, talk to me about how, like, you made Spanish work. Cause like, I've watched your videos on it. You now speak fluent Spanish. You obviously, your wife is Mexican, and like, I assume that you yes. guys can communicate in Spanish. Like, how did yes. you go about it? Like making, you know, cause again, the former teammate of yours, I talked to, I know he made an effort. I listened to him give a postgame, really try his hardest to give a postgame interview in Spanish one time. And, you know, it was tough.
No, it, for sure. It was tough. It's one of those things where you can't be afraid to fail what you're saying. I was so worried about before it being proper about what I was saying and how I was saying it, when really you don't have to. And the great thing about being down here, as long as you make an effort, they really appreciate it down here. It's not... And that was a situation where, like, oh, you don't speak good enough Spanish, you know, you need to learn better. It was never like that at all. So I lived on Google Translate. There were days that I said, hey, just don't talk to me, guys, please. My mind is so fried right now. I don't want to do any translating, because it was translation in my head, speak, listen, translate it back in my head. What I want to say, translate it back. So for several years, it was that way. The best thing that ever happened to me is that I was part of it. I was in it every day. I had to learn, or I was going to be miserable. So I was immersed. That's what I was looking for. I'm immersed in it every day. So it was a lot easier for me to learn it going down the road. And fortunately, when I met my wife, she spoke good enough English to where we can piece together conversations when we first started dating in English and Spanish. And as a matter of fact, most of our conversations are in English at home, even though we can definitely speak in Spanish whenever we need to.
The crowds down there are like rowdy. Like I love watching the games. It's clearly different than minor league baseball. When you started to learn Spanish, like when you got pretty fluent in Spanish, did it make pitching on the road worse? Because now you know what's being said to you, what's being said at you.
Honestly, not at all. Because as a competitive pitcher, I don't really hear anything when I'm on the mound anyways, but it made it more fun in the bullpens because some people would say things and then I would look at them and respond to them in Spanish. And they'd be like, oh my gosh, this gringo speaks Spanish. That's crazy. Like, honestly, it was more, I earned their respect at that point. Or if I responded or said something back to them in Spanish, they're like, no way, this guy just responded like that. And it ends up being a positive thing because, I mean, the opposing fans can be rowdy. But they like to say things knowing that you don't know what they're saying. But as soon as you find out they know what they're saying, they either tone it down or it becomes fun or a good connection with them. So maybe they earn a little more respect for you. And maybe I earn a fan from a different side or a different team. So it was interesting hearing the type of things they say compared to what it would be in the U.S. It's a little bit more crude, if you want to say it that way, because most of the time people don't take things personally down here, most of the time. So the things that come out of people's mouths are a little bit more drastic than they would be in the U.S., but I've embraced it. I love it. I love that they talk trash either way, good or bad. It's actually part of the experience about playing down here. So,
you start pitching there fall and summer. You're putting up really good numbers. There are former big leaguers. There are current big leaguers who will play in the winter. Did the dream of like getting picked back up and going to AAA or finding a way back to the big leagues, like was that still in your mind, or was it, hey, I now have a good thing going. The pay is obviously much better in Mexico than it is in indie ball or an affiliated ball. Like was it still in the back of your mind that you'd like to get picked up, or did it become like, this is the new dream, like having success out here in a league that most everyone who plays in it says is a lot more fun than playing in AAA?
And I'll tell you, that's the absolute truth. It is so much fun playing down here most of the time. Travel can get tough. If you're not on a good team, it can be tough. But it shifted. I knew when I came down here, I didn't know if I was going to have much opportunity to get back, because at that point I was 30 years old or 30 plus. So to get back there, something drastically had to change. I had to be throwing 5 miles an hour harder, which I knew was not going to happen. So I thought maybe if I threw the ball well, I can get to Korea or Japan, somewhere like that. And then honestly, when that kind of went away after a couple of years and I was making decent money, it became about, you know what? I'm going to enjoy myself down here. I met my wife. We have two kids now. And I love every second that I'm down here. The cost of living is so much cheaper. So I'm living well, enjoying myself now. At this point, it's just writing it out to see how long I want to play, how long I can play, and to see what baseball has for me afterwards, if anything. I don't see myself becoming a coach. I'm such a competitor and I love to compete. To take that away and do the same exact things I've been doing and not being able to compete, it seems like a nightmare situation more so than, I get to be a part of the game still. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. At this point, I'm still enjoying myself. I'm 40. Knock on wood, I still feel healthy. Everything's good. Putting up some decent numbers this year. Had a couple of bad outings away and I have elite numbers again, but that's baseball. Enjoying myself. The quality of the league has gotten a lot better because there's so many more imports this year. You get a lot of guys fresh out of the big leagues. Not nearly as many Mexicans players, and I understand how that feels for them to a certain point. But the actual quality overall of the league has gone sky high. So we'll see what the future holds. But like I said, it's shifted. It went like, maybe I'll get a chance to the big leagues. Probably not. Maybe I can get to Korea or Japan. And you know, at this point, I'm just enjoying myself, loving every second that I'm down here.
So with that, like they say for a lot of guys, like when guys retire, it's like when putting in the work is not what they want to do. It's like the games are always fun. Does, you know, how much does it help that like the, you know, the thing about playing in the winter leagues and or playing in Mexico in general, playing in Latin America, is that the games matter. And it's kind of the same thing as indie ball. A lot of people, you know, you're playing to win in indie ball. You talked about it in Chico. I'm sure it was the same thing in Sugarland and stuff like that. But like with these, it is just these teams are their Yankees. Like they are wanting, you know, this is what who the town wants to win.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of like how like Premier League works. It's like this is the town's team and they're riding them hard. How, like, do you think if it was just a development, if it was the same intensity as like double A? Even if everything else was the same, you know, the money, your life, whatever, do you think you would have hung it up like 5 years previous if it were not for you're playing for the big ring every single year?
Sure. That's tough to say. I say I love playing, I love competing, and we do play at places that don't have those fans. That is definitely not nearly as fun. Now, I got spoiled playing in Culiacan for 6 years where that is their team. I mean, that's the big league. That's pretty much the Yankees in Mexico is Tomateros. At the best ballpark with the best fans. It would be tough to play when it wasn't like that, if they weren't. I still live in Culiacan, and I'm still recognized virtually every day when I'm there. Not necessarily like a celebrity or that, but people know who I am or know that I'm, you know, especially standing out as a, you know, 6'3" gringo walking around. But it would be a lot different, a lot tougher to stick around as long as I have, knowing that I don't have, there's not going to be that adrenaline, that fire from 15, 20,000 fans watching you play. Fortunately for me, it's not like that down here. And I don't see that going away anytime soon. I think the quality of the league getting better is going to draw more fans to the game. So I think there's a lot of good things in the future, especially in the summer league with all the new imports and the quality they're bringing in. I think a lot of indie ball guys are going to see this as a great opportunity here because there's no buyout here. You can come down here and put in your contract. There's no buyout. And instead of paying 10 or 15 grand, which you have to do when the Atlantic League and the American Association, they charge 10 grand to buy your contract. You can come down here and play in Mexico, play for a few thousand dollars more than what you're going to be making stateside and face better competition. And teams can come down or more scouts can come down here and see what guys are doing. And every organization, every stadium has a TrackMan. So teams can watch and see what guys are doing. TrackMan wise, because the TrackMan is such a huge tool for them, or like with the almost the end all be all sometimes with some of these guys, they check it out. Like, yeah, I don't have to go scout this guy. I can see what his numbers are doing right now and get guys out of here for nothing. So I think over the next couple of years, I think we're going to see a lot more guys getting signed out of Mexico.
What are the, when you tell like former teammates or even like family and friends that you play in Mexico, you live in Mexico now, like what are the misconceptions they have about the league, about your life? You know, so the stuff that doesn't track.
Sure. A lot of people, when they think of Mexican baseball, they think eastbound and down, like these like run down small little pueblos where you're playing. Now, I'll tell you, I played in those in spring training games. We play a lot of little pueblos and some really ratty fields and not conducive to professional baseball. But I think I've had family come down when I first started playing in Mexico, and they see, especially when I was in Culiacan playing with the Tomateros, see the type of stadiums we're playing in and the type of competition and how it literally feels like a major league baseball game on a condensed scale when you're there. Anytime I've had people come down, like, this is awesome, man. Like, wow, I can't believe it. I had no idea it was like this. And then they're like, oh, well, you live in Culiacan. Do you feel scared or does it feel dangerous every time you're there? I said, never. I mean, there's obviously, you know, you can find trouble wherever you're at in any city you're in. But I've never felt uncomfortable or unsafe where I live. Or in pretty much any parts of Mexico that I've been to. So that was a big misconception that, you know, you have to be, I mean, you can't be an idiot, but you don't have to be scared anywhere you go, honestly, especially if you're just going, watching baseball games and doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're going to be fine anywhere you go. Those are the two main things, like, do you feel safe while you're there? And then what kind of fields are you playing on? I don't talk a lot about my salary, but I'm sure a lot of them would be surprised how much they can pay down here. And I know some guys are making, guys like Trevor Bauer and some other guys that are down here are making absurd amount of money. But, you know, to make a very comfortable living down here, I think would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I think I would when I had a friend who played on one of your teams, I would watch the games and stuff like that. And it looks awesome. I would encourage anyone to, you can subscribe. I will say that it was very hard when I was trying to unsubscribe to figure it out because I couldn't get the site to translate, and that became a problem. The games, like the constant, the noise, how into it fans are, like it's extremely cool. It's fun to watch, even if you can't understand the announcers, you're still there. It comes through when you watch it. So I would encourage, I mean, all the games are available to stream. So I would encourage everyone to go.
Yes. There's a subscription site. It's super inexpensive. Mm-hmm. I think the Winter League would be a better time to do it because it's a shorter season and the games mean more, and you're gonna have a lot more fans of those games. You'll be a lot more passionate, that kind of thing too. Obviously, if you know some guys down here, if you have a friend on a team, you can watch any one of those games if you subscribe for, like, I think it's like 500 pesos, like $25 mm-hmm. for the whole season, something around that. I haven't subscribed this year. A lot of games are also on YouTube, and you can follow live games on YouTube, and the whole game is on YouTube after the game too. So
yeah, it's very,
there's lots of avenues.
Yeah, very worth checking out for any baseball fan. But I have a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Sure.
Favorite Mexico ballpark?
Culiacan, without a doubt.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Oh man, he wasn't the best at that time, but Puig was. I faced Puig twice, and I got him out twice, once with a strikeout. So that was the biggest name, I think, that I could tell you that I've faced. Let's go with him, Puig.
Favorite food city in Mexico?
Oh, my. I got to say, Culiacan. I was not a seafood fan before I got here, and they have the best seafood I've ever had in my life. Oh, it's fantastic.
Favorite moment during your time in Mexico? Specific game, series, championship?
My very first – I have three rings with Tomateros, and my very first ring – was probably the biggest celebration, the biggest, adrenaline rush that I've had was the very first one. That was awesome. Game 7, 13th inning. I pitched early in that game, gave up a go-ahead homer to one of the best hitters in Mexico. We came back and tied the game in the ninth. I went back out for the ninth, had a clean ninth. We ended up going 13 innings and got the win in 13 innings in game 7 of the finals. It was surreal.
As a fan, just the thought of my team in an extra innings game 7 makes my stomach cramp.
Ugh. Right. Oh man.
The last one, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare travel story from the minor leagues, from Mexico, from wherever? Do you have a one that sticks out as a nightmare?
Nothing that sticks out specifically, but I mean, there's times we're traveling 13, 14 hours, the bus breaks down. We had one time where we were stuck on the side of the road to the where they had to cancel the game that night because we weren't going to make it on time. I had to play the next day. The air goes out on the bus. The bathroom stopped up. But that's kind of a fairly, I don't want to say regular occurrence, but that's not an uncommon thing that happens down here. But nothing that's been too miserable. A couple of delayed flights or canceled flights where we got to try something else or that kind of thing. But when you're playing in the South is a lot of bus rides. So that gets a little bit tiresome when you're, you know, averaging 7, 8, 9, 10 hours. Some of them are 13. North, there's a lot more flights because there's a lot bigger cities and easier travel. But yeah, the long bus rides with very rarely do they go up without some sort of complication. So, but that's part of playing down here. And if you can't handle that, then see you later.
I mean, the tough bus rides though are part of playing in the minors too, because you get the the AC going out, the bathroom, you get all that stuff. It's just something about a bus, man. You can just never.
Yes, right.
There might not actually be a good bus in the world from doing this show.
That's the truth.
they might all be bad. But Derek, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining the show, and good luck the rest of your season.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
Absolutely. And that's it for today's episode. Big thanks to Derek Loop for stopping by, walking us through his career journey. If you enjoyed this one, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.